the secret to it is actually giving someone access to something they can't normally see or do.
When you think of mobile technology, you tend to think of your phone, right? But this week on Download This Show, the expanding definition of mobile technology, smartwatches, eyewear, augmented reality, and more.
You've got to carve out your relevance, otherwise the user will just decide for you that your app's rubbish.
Recorded live at the Remix Sydney conference, get set to find out how advertisers, developers, and publishers like BuzzFeed intend on using this new generation of technology to change the way we all live.
You want to, when you actually get there, actually have your expectations met.
This is your guide to the week in technology, the internet and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, taking you now to the Sydney Town Hall. Welcome to Download This Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome to the stage Ambarish Mitra, the co-founder of Blipper, the editor of BuzzFeed Australia, Simon Criar, and Russ Tucker from the Digital Arts Network.
Arts, not us.
I'm glad we cleared that up. That was all my questions are about posteriors. It's going to end really poorly. All right, can we start with you, Rish? What is Blipper?
Blipper is an image recognition and augmented reality platform which allows users to interact with the world they see through their camera lens on their phones. For those of you who don't know what augmented reality means, augmented reality is a technology which enhances the reality. The world you see with your eyes, if you overlay it with digital information, it could be relevant, utility, or just entertaining and fun. And it's becoming an increasing trend where this technology really gives people more information about things you see. Because things you see with your eyes doesn't necessarily talk to you.
So what are the sorts of things you're using that technology for, or you'd like to see people use that technology for?
It's actually disrupting.
Sorry, we have a rule at this event. When somebody says the word disrupt or innovate, we drink. So yeah. If you have a drink, you should neck that thing now.
Yeah. It's genuinely disrupting every industry in the world as we speak, because we've created this fascinating digital layer in the last 25 years of the internet. I call it a very smart plumbing job, and we've been feeding information into it. But what happened is we're a very physical creature, and the physical world is way bigger than the digital world. And what companies like Blipper are trying to do is they're trying to match the relevant information onto the things you see. It's to simplify it, it's like internet on things.
All right, tell me about the Digital Arts Network, Russ. What do you guys do?
So we're part of TBWA, which invented the coin, the phrase disruption.
And, your fault!
It's all
it's
our
your
fault.
Fault!
It's our agency's fault.
Get out, you're fired.
So what we do is we're an advertising marketing company, and I think we've been very lucky over the years to experiment and dabble and play with mobile for brands. And I think the thing that we try and do with those experiences is make sure that they're either fun and engaging, or there's a level of kind of emotional attachment that you get in an experience. You know, that's one end of the spectrum. The other end is things like, financial planning or, you know, superannuation, predictive modeling apps, and really exciting things like that. So it's a real vast spectrum of work, really, but that's kind of it in a nutshell.
All right, so where in your world does mobile become incredibly important?
Well, I'll give you an example. It was a piece of work we did, say, 3 or 4 years ago now, and it was for a client of ours, Pedigree, and they have a program which is called the Dog Adoption Drive, and what they aim to do is get as many dogs adopted, mainly because they're a pet food brand, and the more dogs that are kept alive, the more dog food they sell. Pretty smart, disruptive business idea.
Now you're just messing with me now.
So I'll give you an example of where mobile's so different to a traditional platform. So, for example, the print execution for that piece of work was a picture of a dog on a can of dog food and a number, and it said, call this number and you can adopt this dog. Whereas what we did in mobile was we created an app and it scanned your face, looked at your facial features, scanned a database of dogs' faces, looked at their facial features, and then basically found a match and said... And basically said, hey, you really look like this dog. You should adopt this dog.
Seriously, you could retool that to be the new Tinder.
It was Tinder for dogs, basically, yeah. But I think what that's using, though, is it's using those hardware bits of functionality, the camera and the network connection to the web, and it's actually making a more emotional connection with you because you're more likely to adopt a dog that looks like you because everyone knows that dogs are meant to look like their owners. So that, for me, is kind of an example of a fun example of how mobile is vastly more effective for us as a communication tool than a piece of static print that you can't interact with.
Now, Simon, you're a publisher, and BuzzFeed do mobile exceptionally well. It's a really well-optimized site for mobile. How important is it in terms of your traffic?
It's 72% of our uniques, so the vast majority of our
links.
Yeah, it's massive. It's well over 60% of our traffic in Australia. So, yeah, absolutely fundamental. And as more and more of us have smartphones, as it disrupts even more, like, the way that we consume media and in many ways replaces, you know, like, I'm somebody who used to read magazines in the bath and now reads, like, long form on my phone most of the time. And I'll read long, long essays on my phone. And I think there's this transition where people are much more used to being in that intimate space with a mobile device than anything else. And so, you know, I think the percentage of our audience engaging with us on mobile is going to be, just keep on increasing. We've got a kind of Tinder for pets called Cute or Not, which is a kind of standalone BuzzFeed app that our app team have built, where basically you can upload a picture of your pet and it gets swiped left or right by the other readers on the site, and it's like proving like incredibly popular. So I think, yeah, those kind of engaging mobile experiences are just going to keep on coming.
Do you see there's a distinction between the kinds of content that works exceptionally well on mobile that doesn't do as well on desktop or vice versa?
Yeah, I think there's actually not really that much of a distinction, I don't think. I think basically the way we produce our content is basically designed to be consumable on whatever platform people are getting. And one of the exciting things that we're doing is a thing called Distributed, which is creating content that isn't actually on BuzzFeed.com. The website is like on Vine or on Instagram or on mobile platforms designed specifically for the kind of, you know, as a consumption in that, those places. And I think that's based on like how people are consuming. So we're like on a news story, yes, we'll write an article, but we'll also do a very succinct like 3-bullet point thing that goes onto the BuzzFeed News Instagram. And so kind of, you know, we go where the audience is really, and that's kind of our thinking on in terms of how we...
Instagram's an unusual one though, because you often don't get kind of link backed to the site itself. So does it work better as a branding exercise?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we have reporters around the world who do the vast majority of the work on Twitter. Sometimes they'll publish stories on BuzzFeed.com, the website, but a lot of their reporting is actually on Twitter. So we're actually doing the work there and people are following our story. So I think, you know, we're really interested in, you know, we can commercialize as we go in those places. We can commercialize on Snapchat. We can commercialize on Instagram. You know, there's opportunities there. What you want to do, first of all, is figure out how content moves in those spaces. And people are there. So, you know, eventually, you know, smart companies will work out ways and agencies of creating great content for brands as well that lives in those spaces.
Rish, tell me, what's your dream scenario in terms of how people are using Blipper? Like, what's the scenario where just like, that's it, we've made it, that's the perfect use of the technology?
It's a more universal use of it. If I go slightly macro on that philosophy, is just a reminder that our eyes are the most important sensor, primary sensor in the human body. Most of our cognition and learning comes from it. And the rest of the senses are supporting senses. And eyes lead to curiosity. Literally, the whole civilization's been built on that. What happens is, on the other side, today the internet is very driven by words. And the majority of people do not speak more than 8% of any given vocabulary of most languages. And words are almost a part of perception, and search is the access to the planet right now. I'm summarizing it for you. What would image recognition and augmented reality, which leads to visual search, is going to bring is people can literally discover the world just by looking at it. And that behavior today, you might feel that, hey, what's the need of it? There is need of it. I mean, you're going for a walk in the park and your son asks you, what's that flower? What's that leaf? What are you going to describe on a search engine? Like green leaf or leaf-shaped leaf? So
I'm sure that's a Google search somewhere.
It's one of those things which only when it happens, you feel that how did we live without this? Like in mid-90s, we didn't feel the need for search. So what it's trying to do, it's trying to replace pointing. Like, it's proximity. Hey, what's that? And sometimes people have different curiosities, even if you have knowledge. It's like if you look at something, hey, I know that's a banana, but that's not my curiosity. What can I make with it is my curiosity. It's like, you're wearing a gray jumper. My questions are, gray jumper, or I like the color gray, or I like the cut. People have so many questions in their head.
It's Ben Sherman. I bought it half an hour ago up the road. Didn't need a search engine for that. Now, did you?
I love how we look a lot at Pinterest, and with Pinterest, we could actually take a photo of you and then pin that to Pinterest and then find a whole range of gray things that might be jumpers or sweaters, but might be other gray things as well. And certainly that sense of being... Pinterest is a huge referrer to BuzzFeed. Like, it's our second biggest globally. And I think the sense of looking at the world visually is like a massive, huge, important thing.
The sheer amount of discussion about my jumper means I can claim it back on tax, right? Okay.
Yes, done.
What are the biggest challenges with image search at the moment for you?
It is the biggest and most complicated computational problem on the planet to recognize everything. It's almost like a mini race. Everybody's after images. Look at the trends in the world, like Instagram, Pinterest, Snapchat, Blipper. What do you see? It's pictures. You know, it's a race to capture pictures because we are all behind-the-scene deep learning artificial intelligence engines. The more you use it, the more images you give us, the smarter the system becomes, and the more useful the product would be in future, where glasses and things like that take off. So our biggest challenge is, you know, what search engines did for the web, Blipper wants to do for the world. How do you recognize everything on the world? It's a very complex problem. It's going to take us many years.
I'm glad you brought up glasses, because when we talk about mobile culture, often we kind of, the conversation drifts to mobile phones, but in actual fact, it does cover wearables, smartwatches, and glasses. Do you think things like Google Glass have a future? Because there was a spike of interest, and then it sort of just dissipated.
Like any trend, I mean, it's... being written off is the best thing that can happen to a trend, because the trend comes back stronger. Mid-80s, everybody wrote off mobile phones too. So, you know, Albert Einstein said, if everybody understood your idea, it's not a good idea. So if something has a future, that less people understand it initially. So glasses do have a future. Whether it's going to replace mobile phones or not, it's going to be a different form factor. It's going to be several factors would go into it from a usefulness and frictionless way of accessing information. But mobiles will remain strong for a long time, except I don't know why we still call it mobiles, but it is a supercomputer, and that computer will support everything.
I think what we're seeing, though, is, broadly speaking, is a humanization of technology, right? So we're seeing... You know, it started with a phone, and then it became a smartphone, and now it's becoming much more like, it's starting to have more human qualities to it. So it listens, it sees through the camera lens, it's starting to learn. You look at some of the real innovations, and you're getting into predictive monitoring and predictive modeling of where you're going to go next. So things like, I know you go this way to work, it will send you an alert in the morning and go, try not to go, actually leave in 5 minutes. Traffic's better now because it's listening out for you. So I think...
And some of that technology does exist in the form of Google Now and whatnot.
I know, and that's all getting brought through our devices. And I think the more you think about mobile as your second brain, I think the more it kind of opens your mind as to what's going on. So the second brain that lives in your pocket happens to be your mobile phone. But what that supercomputer second brain is doing is then controlling other things. So it's becoming almost like your second central nervous system. It's monitoring what you see. It's listening out and learning and listening to things. It's really becoming more and more of a human part of a human way of working versus a technology cold machine thing.
What do you think that does to us, the addition of a second brain in the long term?
I think there's two ways it could go. I think either it will be naturally more and more embraced, and I think the movie Her is a good example of how it could
play out. Because that ended so well for that guy.
Yeah, it ended badly for him. But it's kind of interesting the way they visualized the effects in that film. It was all voice-driven and very discreet technology, you know. There's no giant Google glasses on his face. It's very hidden away. And I think, you know, Blipper might end up being a lens on an iris, you know, that does that for you. It's very hidden technology. What it does to people, I think, could actually end up in a backlash. I think we could end up seeing a lot of a rise of privacy issues where people just don't want to be connected because it's got, the technology's got too much into their personal
human
lives.
Actually there already in terms of social media. We obviously are obsessed by Facebook and Twitter and big social networks, but the things that are really moving with young people who've grown up in a world where Facebook and Twitter are the only things they know and can't remember a world before, they're obsessed with like Secret and Whisper and apps which where they can share things but they don't want to reveal actually who they are. There's a sense of like wanting to preserve that anonymity. I'm really like, one of the things we're trying to do as we're figuring out our news app, which is going to launch very soon, is, you know, we're bombarded by all these notifications on our screens. And part of, I think, living with technology and thinking of this thing as a second brain is actually teaching it how you want it to respond and not, you know, not let yourself be overwhelmed by the data you get, but saying, okay, I don't want that, I'm going to turn that off. And you know, when we're thinking about our news app, we're actually trying to get it to sort of be like a friend. So the friend's going to say, hey, this is this really great thing. And it'll be based on like the patterns of the things that you've interacted with previously. So I think, you know, we have to kind of recognize, unless we don't want to carry a mobile phone around, that this is the world that we live in. And actually for it not to be overwhelming and not to take over our lives and for us to be in control of it, we have to teach it what we want. You know, it's there. If you don't want it, you know, go back to a phone that you ring up and you call and don't have all the access to all other things.
Yeah, and then Facebook will buy Secret and then it's not Secret anymore.
And then we'll do another panel about that. I want to know a little bit more about the thought process that's going into building that BuzzFeed news app. What sort of controls would one get in terms of being able to manage the ubiquity of it, for lack of a better?
I think it's personalization. So basically, you will give it a real signal about the things that you're interested in. So you might be interested in cats rather than dogs. You might be interested in news about Melbourne rather than Sydney. And initially, you will teach it a framework for what it's going to tell you. And that will then take out all the noise and just give you things. We're aiming for like two or three pieces of content that would land and be notified in a day and not be like, you know, 50 different, hey, it's something's happened in the world. It's breaking news. You've got to know about it. It's like it doesn't make any difference to you. So actually, initially, you will select some of the parameters and then you know, the technology will learn from you based on the things that you actually really like that thing because you then shared it with someone, and if you keep on sharing that particular type of content, that means you really like that kind of thing. We're going to give you more of that specific thing. So it's algorithmically generated. You know, it's not like there's somebody in BuzzFeed going, oh yeah, that's what they share that.
I like to imagine there's a little person there just doing it.
It's Grumpy Cat.
Grumpy Cat. Is there an ETA on when that will happen?
It's very close. It's been a process where we hired technology people and editorial people last year, and we're not rushing it out. We're basically, you know, it's been very interesting inside to look at the alpha testing because we're trying to build something like this internally as a startup. And this is the thing for us as a company, is that we're going to build more of these kind of standalone apps. We've got Cute or Not, we've got the main BuzzFeed app, but we're looking at a video app because people are spending so much time on mobile on video. And for us, it's really useful because people come in and out of the site, but when people have got an app, you know, you've got this amazing amount of data. Where, you know, you can actually, you know, they're telling you like the things they're really interested in. So it's, as a company, it's very useful for like looking at who your core users are and what they want to do.
Has BuzzFeed at any level had a conversation about what is the right way to leverage wearable technology, or are you just waiting to see what happens with smartwatches and go from there?
Yeah, you can get BuzzFeed on your Apple Watch, so we're in there, we're thinking about it, yeah. And some of the, you know, we haven't, the news isn't there yet, but when the news is there, I think that sense, like, you know, what you want to do is, that thing is useful, the wearable device is useful in that, like, at the moment, you know, your phone buzzes and you take it out of your pocket and you look to see what it is, and just that quick glance, it will save you time in terms of taking it out of your phone. But you want it to be, you know, with all of our the content that we produce, we want to be honest with people what we're offering. We don't want to, you know, trick them. People, you know, throw clickbait at BuzzFeed and companies like that, but basically we want to deliver on the promise. So we want to say, this is a great piece of content, and when it lands on your phone or on your wearable, you want to, when you actually get there, actually have your expectations met. Otherwise, people are like, right, I'm going to delete BuzzFeed, I'm going to delete Blipper, I'm not going to, you know. So you have to really deliver on the promise you make.
From an advertising standpoint, the prospect of wearable technology must be exciting, but also a little bit wary.
I think it's just what you do with it and how you what's the emotional response you're trying to get from that. So, for example, a wearable piece of technology that, for a health brand makes total sense versus a piece of wearable technology for a dog food brand, unless it's tracking where your dog's. That's a good idea, actually. We should do
that. Yeah, get on your dog.
Yeah. Where's my dog gone? Do-do-do.
Please make it do that exact noise for me.
I think the big point in all of this, though, is just relevance, really. It's like, what's the relevance? You know, not everyone should be on that tiny piece of real estate. And you've got to carve out your relevance, otherwise the user will just decide for you that your app's rubbish. you know, regardless of what brand or content offering it is, if it doesn't work in that tiny format, it's pointless. So I think we'll see integration with things like cars and watches. Was a project we worked on for Nissan, which was a smartwatch for a Nissan. I think there's going to be endless applications to it. I think there's just always going to be that question mark as to, yeah, but is that really relevant to that brand? So I think brands and marketers are going to experiment heavily with it. It's just what's the point of that? You know, why would someone bother with it? For us, the real sort of move at the moment is in VR. So Google Cardboard, Google Play, Oculus Rift. We've done a lot of work with that recently with, you know, 3D CGI experiences. So virtual crash test dummy, put on a helmet. This is what it feels like to smash in a car crash, to talk to you about safety within a car, you know, in a real car with hydraulics and all sorts of fun stuff. I think, broadly speaking, I think with both augmented reality and virtual reality, the secret to it is actually giving someone access to something they can't normally see or do. So it works brilliantly in the motor industry because you can say, come and experience this car before it's been built yet, or showing someone what a property might look like, or giving them access to a music
video.
Please
don't give real estate agents any more power than they already have.
And I think what Google, where it's getting really interesting is the latest Google Cardboard Play, which means that you can now get the kit for $6. Like, it's not a lot of money anymore. So the Oculus Rift was expensive. You know, the Samsung Gear is reasonably expensive too. But it's come down to $6 for a pack. So it's becoming incredibly accessible. And I think all of those, you know, neat tricks and cool applications of AR are going to then drift into virtual reality film as well.
Well, that's the other thing, because the way Google Cardboard works is it's basically using a phone. You put a phone in a sort of a cardboard housing, and of course the phone comes with camera and it gives you all the opportunities to take the best of VR and the best of AI and meld them together. You guys should marry. That's what I'm actually saying.
We look similar.
Yeah, similar. So similar. Simon, this might be a huge jump, but is there a space where BuzzFeed would want to play in this area?
We've been making some pretty funny videos where we've put people in situations with augmented reality and basically film their responses. So it's kind of like we film them, they react, it's a split screen. I think my favorite is the OAP seniors watching interactive porn, and they're sitting there, you know, grandparents watching pornography, and you know, the reactions is incredible. So yeah, like from an entertaining point of view, we've been having some fun with it. I don't think we've gone that far into thinking about how we might you know, use it to get our own content out at this stage.
I think it's
but I'd love to see, like, you know, like, I'd love to, you know, our spirit animal in Australia is the quokka. I'd love to have some kind of augmented reality where I could just transport myself to Rottnest Island in WA and hang out with the quokka. You know, I think that'd be amazing. So who knows?
It's really interesting, though, that whole idea of live 360 events. That's where I think it can play quite a big role in the way we consume video media. So, you know, that basically having that camera, you know, with Jay-Z live on stage, like, that's when you go, oh, shit, that would be interesting, you know, or access behind the scenes to something, or, you know, even a live news broadcast where you go, we're in the middle of a riot and someone's holding a 360 camera rig. Like, the rigs itself are that big now.
Yeah, like, and that's the compelling possible thing about, like, the drone journalism we're seeing is that it's taking you in somewhere where you can't, you hitherto haven't been able to go. So something that merges those things and takes you into a new place, I think that'd be amazing, yeah.
Is there the financial imperative for this?
From an advertising point of view, I think brands are willing to invest a small amount to play at the moment. I think where the financial move is actually coming from the entertainment houses. So, you know, expect to see Hollywood blockbusters in 360. You know, it's a natural progression for them. So I think there's going to be real financial investment at that end of the spectrum. Gaming is going to be a massive financial investment from the gaming companies. So I think movie houses and gaming companies, they've got the financial might to actually play with this stuff. This market locally, I think we're seeing a few brands dabbling in it, mainly Samsung, and
who have a hardware imperative.
Who do, yeah, and also, you know, stuff we've done with NRMA Insurance, you know, weirdly love a bit of augmented reality.
Of course they do. It just makes total sense.
Oh, I think we're obviously obsessive about all these like devices and smartphones and stuff. And I think it's a percentage of the world. It's a real first world thing. In actual fact, the vast majority of the world doesn't have a smartphone and are getting really excited about, you know, the kind of devices we were using 10 or 15 years ago. So I think it's going to be really interesting. You know, within the next 3 or 4 years, the majority of the world will have a smartphone. And then there'll be this huge kind of, you know, the amazing changes in the way that we're consuming information, sharing information, connecting with people around the world. I think it's going to have a fundamental, I mean, we're seeing it in Africa with, they've never had telecommunications with fixed internet, but they're having, you know, in big cities, mobiles going everywhere. And I think, you know, as technology trickles into, third world economies around the world, it's going to have a game-changing effect there. So I'm very excited to see how that shakes out, and actually shakes out media as well, in terms of the fact that, you know, like this is, you know, journalistically, it's the most enabling device ever. It, you know, you can be in the center of a story and you can share it with the world instantly. You don't need to go home. You don't need to do anything other than turn on your Periscope or tweet and you're there, right? Creating content. And I think that, you know, that is just going to, is already completely changing journalism, but as it's rolled out around the world, it's going to have a massive impact.
I think we're going to see a real kind of fluid connection to everything via mobile technology. So, you know, a future scenario might be a seamless transition from your, you know, house into your driverless car that's pre-planned your route to work. You know,
you've got this whole future just mapped out, don't you?
You just sit there, you don't do anything.
You just sit there and basically sit there on BuzzFeed through your smartwatch into your retina with Blipper technology augmenting your surroundings so that you're in a much nicer place than you really are. So I think I've just described the Matrix.
How can you
Matrix.
Be in a nicer place than Sydney?
True. I think, you know, in all seriousness, I think we're going to see a fluid connection of everything. So the Internet of Things is coming at us really fast. So controlling your central heating from your mobile phone right the way through to 360 movies. And I think also we still might see a scenario where there's a real backlash against connectivity.
I think as we live in a world where our technology is so part of it, I think actually that escapism is going to become very important. And certainly I see that as well, that places are actually branding themselves as the place where you leave your mobile at the door, you don't bring it. And like, you know, I had the first 10 days of this year completely off the grid, off the internet, off the phone, off everything, took photos, listened with a film camera, listened to records on vinyl. And I think it's actually increasing. That's going to be a trend that's important. Leave the mobile, read a book, you know, consume a newspaper, you know, get in touch with the world that was before the world we're living in.
A world without your second brain. There is a thought for the future. Ladies and gentlemen, give a round of applause to our panel.
That is this week's live edition of Download This Show, recorded at the Remix Sydney Conference. My name is Mark Fennell, and thanks for listening to another episode of Download This Show.